Brilliant. Thanks, Paul. Good to see you all online and in the building. It's great to be together. We're going to look at this passage today, and I guess in many ways it is it's a classic power play, isn't it? You can see it playing out between Pilate and the Jewish leadership. They're playing games with each other. They're trying to assert their power over each other, trying to prove who's really in control around here. And as such, I think it's going to resonate for us, I guess, within the sort of working world in which we are, because so often in working life, we get caught up in a power play. We see people around themselves trying to build a kingdom of some form in the office, you know, caring more about the departmental budget than the P&L of the firm as a whole, trying to build their own reputation rather than actually getting on and doing the job. And I think we get sucked into it, don't we? You know, we like to think that we rise above it, that we don't play those kind of power games. And yet when we see something done badly, we get frustrated. When we see someone trying to assert themselves over us, we get angry. And so we just get drawn into it. And amidst the anger, the frustration, the scheming, those carefully worded emails, we just miss out on life. It sort of passes us by. And we wish we could sort of raise our horizons a bit, and yet somehow it sort of gets at us. I remember really clearly when I was working in the city, going on a ski weekend with some friends, great weather, blue skies, bright sunshine. But there was a load of politics going on at work, and all I could think about was this politics, and it was chewing away at me, and I tried to sort of block it out, but I just couldn't. And we put all this emotional energy into things, and somehow we can't let it go. What we see in the passage today is this power play between the Romans and the Jews, and in the middle of it all is Jesus. And if only they would look at him, they would see the one that could pull them out of these little games that they're playing and lead them into a far greater kingdom. And so really what I'm hoping this lunchtime as we look at this passage is that it'll help us just to lift our eyes from the day-to-day power plays that we get caught up into, to see something of the wonder of Jesus and to set our hearts afresh on him and his kingdom, which is so much greater than any kingdom we might pursue in this world. I think there's one big point in this passage, so we'll look at that for about 10 minutes, and then I want to look at three reactions to Jesus as we work through it. So the big point is that Jesus' kingdom is a kingdom of truth, and you see it there in verse 37. Pilate says to him, "So you are a king?" And Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I've come into the world, to bear witness to the truth." So amidst these power plays of Israel and Rome competing with each other, Jesus now defines his own kingdom. And his kingdom is defined by truth. So Pilate says, you know, basically, what kind of king are you? And he says, "I'm a king who speaks the truth." So here he is. He's a king. He had the most wonderful kingdom in heaven, the most glorious throne, far greater than Pilate or the Jewish leaders could ever hope to have. And he left it behind to come into this world to be born in poverty. Why? The end of verse 37, to bear witness to the truth. And as such, I just think that's enormously refreshing, isn't it? Because so often, the power games that we see around us, whether it's first century Israel in this passage or 21st century Pannington Basin, people twist the truth, they turn the truth, they exaggerate the truth. But here is Jesus. He's very straightforward. Amidst the lies and the games, he speaks the truth. That is his kingdom, the kingdom of truth. Now, I'm conscious that as I say that, it may feel a little bit cold. You know, when we use the word truth, we maybe visualize sort of cold, unemotional people talking about facts or something like that. We visualize a textbook in our minds. And it's just worth remembering that in John's Gospel, the truth is always the glory about God. So back in chapter 1, you may remember the famous opening to John's Gospel. John says, "Look, no one's seen God, but Jesus, God's word, has come into the world to make him known, full of grace and truth. It's him who will show us the glory of God." And that's one of the themes that runs right the way through the book. So for Jesus to say, "I've come to testify to the truth," it's a glorious truth, not just a sort of a dull truth, as it were. At the moment in school, my son is learning about crystals. and I'm sure when I learned about crystals, we just hung bits of salt on a piece of string. It's very boring. And they're doing it by talking about avalanches, because apparently at the bottom of an avalanche, you get snow falling crystals. And he can talk all about the science of an avalanche. But of course, the exciting thing is when you get his science teachers showed him like videos of all the snow pouring down the mountains. That's the exciting bit, right? When you see it happening, you stand in awe of it. Well, when Jesus says, "For this purpose I've come into the world to testify to the truth he's speaking about is the kind of truth that we would stand in awe of. It's not a sort of actually I think we'll find type of truth. It's a, hey, listen, let me kind of show you what I found. It's not a scientist talking about how colours work. It's an artist laying before us a great canvas. The truth is the glory of God. And as such, it's transformational. You know, there are truths that we can share that are not. I'm, you know, as some of you know, in my spare time, I'm a French horn player. I can happily talk to you for an hour about the development of the history of the French horn over the ages, with a particular focus on the rotary valve in the early 19th century. It will not be transformational for you. But the truth that Jesus is speaking about here is really the truth of the creator of this whole world, and the truth of a glory that goes beyond the glory of Pilate or the Roman, the Jewish temple, or any kind of glory we might build ourselves here. It's the glory of God. You know, maybe in the past we've met Christians who seem to have a chip on their shoulder and want to convince you that they are right. There's a lot more to Jesus speaking the truth than just being right. There is something glorious here. He's showing us the glory of God. And he does that in his teaching. He does it in his life. He does it supremely in his death, as he dies on the cross for our sin, that we might be forgiven and so come into the presence of God in all of his glory. That is what it means for Jesus to say that he is a king who testifies to the truth. So here he is. You're seeing the politics of the ancient world opening up. Pilate is trying to, I think he's trying to annoy the Jews, but not annoy Caesar. The Jews are trying to get what they want whilst also having to work within the system. And Jesus just rises wonderfully above it all, because he's the one who testifies to the truth. He's showing a far greater glory. Or to put it another way, as he does in verse 36, I don't know if you notice this little repeated phrase. He says twice, almost three times, "My kingdom is not of this world." The kingdoms of this world need armies, they need supporters, they need monuments, whether that is a Roman palace or a Jewish temple or a corner office in the Pallington Basin or a place on the org chart. They need people to be afraid of them, they need to prove a point. But Jesus' kingdom is not of this world. And so he doesn't need all of that. He's pointing us to God's glory. His kingdom is the eternal kingdom, heaven, where there'll be no war or death, and no armies, and no abuse of power, just justice and peace and love. You can sense this is a far bigger vision, a far bigger kingdom, a far greater glory than Pilate and the Jews are struggling to establish. You know, their rule may last for a few years, but Jesus' kingdom is eternal. Their glory was focused on buildings that are now ruined. Jesus' name is worshipped throughout the world forever. They lie, they manipulate, they play games. Jesus speaks the truth. And so the invitation of this passage really is to lift our eyes from all the sort of petty politics we get caught up into, and see that amidst it all, Jesus is the one who will lead us to that greater truth. It's glorious, it is liberating. That's the big point of the passage. Jesus speaks the truth. But what I want to do now is just look at three responses to that, because the three reactions you see here are opposition, cynicism, and belief. And I think that is exactly what we see in the world around us and what we'll experience within our workplaces. So first then, opposition, the opposition that suppresses the truth. And we will all know people who are just closed to the Christian faith. They've made up their mind. If we try and talk to them about faith, they just don't want to know. Leave me alone. And then that is what you see with the Jewish leadership here. They're closed. So verse 29, Pilate went outside to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" And they answered him, this is wonderful, "If this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you." it's ridiculous, isn't it? And they're certainly not interested in listening to Jesus. They're utterly closed to him. Why would we give him a hearing? Why would we give him a fair trial? We don't need to hear him. We've made up our minds. What lies behind it? Well, we saw back in chapter 11 that what lies behind it is that they're afraid of their own position. Back then, the chief priest said, listen, if the Romans decide that Jesus is leading a rebellion, they'll come and put down an uprising. And in the process, we could lose everything. They'll destroy our nation, they'll destroy the temple, and of course, they'll take away our own positions of power and status and all the rest of it. And so they won't listen to Jesus because they view him as a threat, the opposition that suppresses the truth. I've been reading, unlike history, I've been reading History of the Crusades recently because I never understood it as a period of history. There's a wonderful story I read the other day about these two French knights who were, they were attacking a fortress that had a tiny garrison, and the garrison offered to surrender. And as they did, they heard this huge army was coming against them. All they had to do was get inside the fortress and they'd be safe. But then the two knights started arguing about whose flag was going to be the first to fly above the fortress when they went in. And they were so busy having this argument, they never got inside, and the army came down and wiped them out. It's farcical. And yet, it's very human, isn't it? Because I think there's a bit of that in all of us that wants to establish our reputation, that wants to fly our flag, that wants to build our power base. And in the midst of it all, we miss what's really going on. That is what's happening to the Jewish leadership here. The creator of the world, the God they claim to worship, is stood in front of them. And they're too hung up on their own status and their influence and what they see before them, too busy building their own kingdoms to listen to Jesus. And it distorts their behavior. You know, this ridiculous thing. If you were not doing evil, we wouldn't deliver to him. Over. The hypocrisy. Do you notice in verse 28? They're very careful not to enter the house of Pilate because that will defile them during the time of the feast. I mean, they're murdering an innocent man. But, you know, they don't want to defile themselves in the feast. So there's hypocrisy here. And actually, they're powerless. Because you notice in verse 31, they don't have the power to put Jesus to death. They need the Romans to do it for them. And often it's weakness and suppression, opposition go together, don't they? It's when someone's weak that they lash out. So here then is one response to Jesus. It's opposition. And it is powerless. It's hypocritical. It's ridiculous. And fundamentally, it is closed. And I think we'll see the same today. People who are just closed to Jesus, who won't even entertain the conversation. Maybe it's a firm that will allow funding for the Muslim group to meet. I think of one firm that will give money for a Muslim group to meet in their firm, but not to the Christian group. I think of other examples of people just opposed to the Christian faith. They won't listen to it. I think you see it a lot in the writings of the new atheists. So you know Sam Harris, this guy who writes against the Christian faith. You say that he's convinced that religion is the source of all evil. You say to him, what about Stalinism? He says, well, Stalinism is a form of religion, basically. Or you say to him, what about William Wilberforce? Did he not do good? And he will say, well, no, William Wilberforce saw that culture at random was changing. That's why he pursued the abolition of slavery. It wasn't his faith that led to it. I mean, that is just bizarre. It's completely counter to facts. And it is closed. And yet, often people buy into it because they see it tweeted and they go with it. It's not listening to the facts. I think that is the modern day equivalent of, if this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you. So we'll find people who are closed and won't listen. I mean, maybe, you know, we're aware of people who, maybe we're on the call today and we're slightly closed to Jesus. Well, let's give them a fair trial. I think I want to say to people, read a gospel, find out about Jesus, give him the fair trial. Don't be closed to him. Maybe we encounter this in our workplaces, people who will jump down our throats if we mention our faith. Well, let's not be thrown by that. That's always been the case. There's always been opposition to Jesus. What we need to do is speak the words of Jesus and hope that people, pray that people respond to the truth. So that's opposition. The second response is cynicism. And I guess we'll encounter this as well. It may not be opposite, sort of anger at the faith so much as just kind of disinterest, you know, any talk of faith and people just swat it away, like, I don't know, a cow in a field swatting away the flies, you know, unmoved as they buzz around him. And I mean, I think this is true for a lot of my friends. They're just disinterested. And I would almost rather they got angry about my faith than just didn't care. And that's, I think, what we see with Pilate, this sort of cynicism. So verse 33, Pilate enters his headquarters, he calls Jesus and says, are you the king of the Jews. You can sense the cynicism already. There's Pilate, he's got his robes on, he's in his palace, he's surrounded by his guards. There's Jesus on his own, in chains. Are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answered, did you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me? It's clear that Pilate has been fed this charge by the Jews. He's not going to like it. They're leading him into something. And so he says, verse 35, am I a Jew? Your own nation and your chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done? You sense the weariness. And you sense that he just doesn't think this has got anything to do with him. I'm not a Jew. I'm not part of this whole thing. This isn't my background. It's got nothing to do with me. Why are you drawing me into it? It's exactly what we'll experience today, isn't it? I'm not religious. I wasn't brought up in this. I don't want to know. It's not for me. But of course, Jesus' kingdom is not of this world. That's precisely the point. It goes beyond the rivalries of Jew versus Rome. And therefore, it encompasses everyone. And so now Jesus invites Pilate to hear the truth. So verse 37, I've come into the world to witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. It's an invitation to listen. And Pilate's response, verse 38, the cynic, what is truth? He doesn't wait for an answer. He just goes straight out and carries on. It's a shrug, isn't it? What is truth? Who knows? Whatever. He gets on with life. And again, we'll hear that today. I don't know. I don't know about this Christian stuff. Who can know? And people just ignore it. And the tragedy is that he misses out. What is truth? Well, in John's gospel, it's the truth that sets us free. Free from pursuing our own little kingdoms, from trying to be enslaved to pride and reputation, free to know God in all his glory. But like the Jews, Pilate is just too busy building his kingdom. I don't think he feels threatened by Jesus so much as Jesus is no use to him. And so he walks away, he goes out to the Jews, and he says, I find nothing against him. But at that point, he should release Jesus if he's got nothing, if he thinks Jesus is innocent. But he doesn't. He starts carrying on the power games. Ah, let's bargain about it. Maybe I can release him to you as part of the feast, do you a big favor. And so they carry on back into the games again. It's cynicism. And it's cheap, isn't it? I mean, we'll encounter cynics all the time where we are. And cynicism, it seems fun, it seems carefree, it plays to the crowd, it works well down the pub. But it's not a philosophy for life. You know, that question, what is truth? We actually need an answer to it. I don't think any of us really respect Pilate as he finds Jesus to be innocent and yet still ends up sending him to the cross. The cynic likes to make out that the Christian is sort of uptight. But actually, the truly carefree person is not the joker down the pub. It's the one who knows themselves to be forgiven, to be eternally secure. That whatever happens in this strange world, they have treasure. That is true freedom. So let's not play the cynic. And let's not be fooled by the cynic. Because there is an emptiness to their philosophy. What is truth? So opposition, cynicism. And then thirdly, you see the followers that listen to the truth. And this is back to verse 37 where we started. For this purpose I was born, for this purpose I've come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. What is it that Pilate and the Jews have in common? They won't listen to Jesus for different reasons. What do Jesus' followers do? They listen to him. You walk into Paddington Station, you see the crowd around you. You look up and you see this magnificent roof above you. The Christians are people who look up from the politics of the day to see the magnificence of Jesus. That's the call of Jesus, to listen to his voice, whether that is reading the gospel for the first time for years or making sure that we carve out time in a busy life to read his words, to listen to him. I don't know where you listen to Jesus and take time out during the week to hear his voice. Maybe you say it's all very well, but when I do try and take that time out, I'm distracted by exactly what we spoke about at the beginning, by all these power plays that are going on. Well, maybe the question we need to ask if we're confronted with a difficult situation at work, a difficult boss or whatever it is what does it look like for me to listen to Jesus' voice in this situation? Maybe it's to dwell on the cross and just how important justice is to God, that he won't ignore our sin, but Jesus pays for it. Maybe it's to pray for our enemies, to pity people that have nothing better to live for. Maybe it's to seek forgiveness for where we've got things wrong. Above all, I think it is to set our hearts on the greater glory that Jesus is pointing us to. You know, we can't escape the politics of the workplace, but we don't need to give our hearts to it. The followers who listen to the truth, and you see that individually, and then just the last thought is just thinking about what it means for us corporately. So verse 36 is fascinating. My kingdom is not of this world. If it were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. My kingdom is not from this world. So you get what he's saying. If he was running an earthly kingdom, then Pilate would have rounded up his followers. He wouldn't have been shy to do that. But they're not fighting with human weapons. They're not fighting with swords and armies. They simply speak the truth. How is it that we, here, a small group of people on Paddington Talks, will reach out and build the kingdom of Jesus in this world? It's by speaking the truth. You know, we don't need the weapons of this world, whether that is flash marketing or coercion or bullying or whatever it is. We simply plainly speak the truth. So when we confront opposition, when we confront cynicism and feel really powerless before it, we simply need to speak the words of Jesus. And I guess that's what we're trying to do at Paddington Talks on a Wednesday lunchtime. I guess it's what we want to be trying to do in our workplaces. You know, whatever we confront before us in terms of people's response to Jesus, whatever we feel in our own hearts, let's listen to Jesus, because that is what his followers do. That's enough for me. I'm going to stop talking then and just chuck it open. Any questions, any observations, any thoughts? Love to hear what people make of it. I'll try and stop sharing the screen.